traded on include withdrawal of operations from South Africa and restrictions on rescheduling loans or extending maturity dates of loans owed by South Africa. At present, the city invests over $200 million in 24 banks. These banks all receive a high enough rating to comply with less strict criteria established in 1985. But does this legislation go far enough in cutting ties with South Africa? Despite Dinkins' anti-apartheid stance, the city is going forward with a recent decision to have First Boston Bank be one of four underwriters of city bonds. First Boston's holding company, Credit Suisse, has interests in South Africa. WBAI asked Mayor Dinkins how he can justify the choice of First Boston as one of the city's bond underwriters when two other cities have rejected association with the bank due to Credit Suisse's ties to South Africa. The mayor responds.
We have found that most of the underwriters, and that's about all of the banks, I suppose, have some relationship with South Africa. What we're doing is extracting from many of them, and there's been already great movement by some in the direction of lessening these ties. It should be pointed out that First Boston itself has no relationship whatever with South Africa. And Credit Suisse is sort of like a grandfather. Even under this legislation, it would not be affected. But it is our hope, it is our expectation that even that relationship will be diminished in the very near future.
The mayor did not elaborate on what kind of pressure would be brought on First Boston to end its ties with South Africa. And that's some of the news for Thursday, June 14th, 1990. The news was engineered by Anthony Sloan. It was produced with Jenny Bourne, Antonia French, Thomas Hilbink, Alan Lipke, Renee Michael, and Shai Wei Yu. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Tara Seiler in Washington for WBAI Listener Supported News.
Weather outlook for Friday? Hazy, hot, and humid.
Time is running out to get your tickets to the WBAI Moonlight River Cruise. They can be purchased with MasterCard or Visa by calling 212-279-0707. Or, if you prefer, you can drop by the station between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. We're at 505 8th Avenue, corner of 35th Street. If you can't call or stop by, you can get tickets at the dock on Pier 84. That's 44th Street and 12th Avenue on Friday, June 15th after 4:30 p.m. The WBAI River Cruise, celebrating 30 years of listener-sponsored radio in New York. Don't miss it. For more information, call 212-279-0707. See ya!
Come on, everybody, and have a party. Everybody, come on and make a move.
And it's just about 11:45. Good evening and welcome to the Fifth Corner. And before I forget, happy Flag Day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought the purpose of Flag Day was to play patriotic music. Boy, I don't know why everybody's so huffy. Okay, it was the Soviet national anthem at some point, but it's still a very patriotic and moving piece of music, the Internationale, performed by the Moscow Radio Chorus. And it's no longer the national anthem of the Soviet Union, but it is a very stirring song and a rallying cry still to this day. In fact, just about a year ago, that song was being sung by students in Tiananmen Square. And no doubt it will be sung again. And that comes to you on this Flag Day, June 14th, 1990. You know, I never could figure out what I'm supposed to do on Flag Day. I mean, you know, you're supposed to wave a flag, I guess, and do something along those lines and just sort of reiterate how patriotic you are. But I don't know. It seems to be more and more hollow every year, and we need all these desperate acts, desperate measures to justify things, to prove that we're patriotic. It seems we're always trying to prove it. And patriotism, I don't know, just it's supposed to come naturally. You don't have to force it. And I see so much of that going on these days. Well, if I offended you by playing that particular patriotic piece, well, sorry, but it's too bad. Because a lot of today's world means being offended and dealing with it and learning from it. Now, listen to this. This is a piece, not a musical piece, a written piece, that appeared this week in the paper, appeared on, in Monday's Newsday, written by a lawyer named Wendy Kaminer. She's author of A Fearful Freedom. I'm saying that three times fast. A Fearful Freedom, Women's Flight from Equality. And this piece is about patriotism. And let's see if anyone out there identifies with this. I do to a degree, but not nearly as much as you're about to hear. Elementary school mornings always started for me with the Pledge of Allegiance and the New York State School Prayer. It was simple, non-sectarian, and patriotic. Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon Thee and beg Thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country. But I always associated the prayer with Christianity. We said different prayers in temple, so I assumed this was what my neighbors said in church. The pledge felt equally alien to me. What, after all, did indivisible mean? And if this was a country of liberty as well as justice for all, why was I required to stand and recite pledge and prayer in unison with my classmates? Compulsory recitation never made me feel free. So, in the seventh grade, I decided to stop pledging allegiance. The Supreme Court had recently declared school prayer unconstitutional, and I was enjoying the freedom not to pray. Knowing very little about the First Amendment, I sensed that free speech included the freedom not to pledge. My homeroom teacher disagreed. When I refused to stand and pledge, explaining that it's not right to make somebody say something, he called me a commie. Red-faced with fury, he proclaimed that people who didn't love this country should go back to Russia, a country my grandparents had happily escaped, and which never had appealed to me. Lacking the power to deport me, he sent me to the principal's office. The principal, Francis Xavier Driscoll, asked me if I was a Jehovah's Witness. The Supreme Court had relieved them of the obligation to pledge in 1948 in respect of their religious beliefs. Well, I was not a Jehovah's Witness, but Mr. Driscoll persisted. Was there anything at all in my religion that forbade me to say the pledge? He asked hopefully, seeking an easy way out for both of us. When I told him I thought it was wrong to force people to pledge, he called my mother. So say the pledge. What would it hurt? She said to me. So let her keep quiet. What would it hurt? She said to the principal. Just ignore her. Don't aggravate yourself. My mother, a practical woman and a peacemaker, managed to fashion a compromise. I could remain silent and keep my right hand at my side, not over my heart, if I stood up with my classmates and wasn't disruptive. Assured that order would be maintained, Mr. Driscoll agreed, and I felt vindicated. I was willing to acknowledge the school's interest in crowd control. Teachers could tell me to stand up or sit down or get in line, as long as they didn't tell me what to say. My homeroom teacher was enraged and felt betrayed by the administration. He thought I should have been suspended, at least for subversion. He warned the class against me, explaining that I would not say the pledge because I had no respect for the values that made this country great. Values that apparently did not include free speech. People like me were a threat to the free world, he suggested. I was weakening our defenses against the Russians. But the Red Army never did roll into Elmont Memorial High School, even though I never again recited the pledge. It's true that the Berlin Wall went up the year after my insurrection, but I swear that wasn't my fault. The country survived my refusal to pledge allegiance, just as it survives occasional flag burnings. The Berlin Wall came down in spite of them. The Soviet Union loosened its hold on Eastern Europe despite last year's Supreme Court decision affirming the First Amendment right to burn a flag. Questions about flag burning have wound their way back to the court, which will soon decide the constitutionality of the Flag Protection Act passed by Congress in response to the court's controversial 1989 flag burning decision involving a state flag desecration law. In fact, that already has happened, and that law has been found unconstitutional. We'll be getting into that a little later. If the Supreme Court persists in upholding the First Amendment and strikes down the new federal flag law, which they have done, Congress will once again be confronted with proposals for a constitutional amendment prohibiting flag burning, which my seventh-grade homeroom teacher would no doubt support. He would have hated flag burners as much as he hated me, as much as he loved the flag and feared the freedom to honor it voluntarily.
In a cage, trouble in a homeland, trouble in a homeland. Makes front page, Zulu, come out to play. Bongo drum set today. Front page caption, read like this: natives dress as terrorists. War, a perfect plan for the one that can the land. Since that ain't you or me, tribal war continually. Powdered milk for malnutrition. Send us some more ammunition. Never mind the ivory tray. Let's go plot a hand grenade. Thank you, boss, for Red Cross. Appreciate goodwill. No, no, no. No room to swing. Some city wanted him to sing. Easy to see, no unity. Masses ruled by minority. When these guys come on the scene, ruin the good blues party. I know I heard the tune before. I thought as I was kicked through the door, something bound admission fee. But I was sure house belonged to me.
pulled at the root. They still bear that old strange fruit. Plenty reasons to be gone, living by the gun. In a cage, trouble, trouble in the homeland, trouble in the homeland. Boss is in a rage. I know, mister, if it was you, it would be cut down like a flower. Some things never change. Corporate crime gets rearranged, only out for the lion's tail.
Okay, well, I guess that's the end of that then, isn't it? Well, some dust got on the needle, and I'm afraid we lost Don Letts's rap there on the song from Big Audio Dynamite. Seems that always happens to him. I don't know. But CDs from now on, folks. And we heard before that the piece from Wendy Kaminer in Monday's Newsday, piece on the Pledge of Allegiance, pledging your allegiance to the flag, and just how fair that is, how constitutional that is. Seems to be a growing debate, and one has to wonder why. Where is the sudden crisis, the sudden demand for your loyalty to the flag? It makes you wonder, you know? Is something around the corner that we all have to unite upon? How come individual thought, individual freedom is so much of a threat these days? Well, we all know what happened to the flag burning law. The Supreme Court threw it out again by a vote of 5-4. And it's a narrow vote, you know. If one person had voted differently, it would be a whole other ball game here. And it's kind of scary to think that that's how close it is, you know. You could just have one person change their mind, and all of a sudden all the laws in this country can just change like that. But since this particular opinion is what prevailed, well, those folks in power, those nice people running our country, have decided to change the law. In fact, to go above the law and change the Constitution, change the Bill of Rights. Change the Bill of Rights. I mean, this is simply unbelievable. And I'd sure like to know what the people who wrote the Bill of Rights would have to say about this. I really would like to know that. Unfortunately, that's something we're all going to have to theorize about. But an amendment to the Constitution banning flag burning. You know, I've always had trouble with authority. I don't know what it is, but if somebody tells me not to do something, I always want to do it, you know, just for some particular reason. I've never even thought of burning flags before, but the ignorance that I hear coming out of Washington, coming from politicians that are too scared to stand up to this nonsense, makes you want to just say enough already, enough. This is not the way that that the Constitution is supposed to be interpreted. I mean, were you aware of rioting mobs in the street, burning flags, and causing all kinds of other problems because of burning flags? I wasn't aware of this. But now, suddenly, it's become a major issue because people don't know when to stop making it an issue. Well, President George Bush, clutching a small bronze replica of the famous World War II flag-raising scene at Iwo Jima, canceled in there somewhere, but I guess I didn't. He called on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment
banning flag burning before this nation's birthday on the 4th of July. Now listen to this, folks. Listen to this. This is what the president said. Yes, I am all for free speech, but I am for protecting the flag against desecration. Here it comes. You ready? The law books are full of restrictions on free speech, and we ought to have this be one of them. The law books are full of restrictions on free speech, and we ought to have this be one of them. Makes you wonder, you know, it's building up a collection of restrictions on free speech here. Why is free speech such a big issue all of a sudden? Why is it such a threat? You know, there's not enough free speech going around. You know, BAI is an example of free speech. But what about all those other clone radio stations you see around here? There's no free speech, you know, except in the music some slips through. But if too much slips through, they pull the record. Anyway, Republican congressional leaders emerged from a White House meeting literally waving small flags and denouncing the Supreme Court for its decision Monday that a federal statute banning desecration of the flag violated constitutional guarantees of free speech. The double-barreled White House effort, with tentative plans for more to come yesterday, which was Flag Day, signaled Republican Party intentions to push for a quick vote on the constitutional amendment and to use the issue aggressively this fall against Democratic members of Congress who oppose it. Asked if he would question the patriotism of members who voted against the amendment, Senate Republican leader Bob Dole of Kansas said, "No," but then added, "I might make a 30-second spot." House Speaker Thomas Foley, who opposes the amendment, announced yesterday he would vote against it, a break with the tradition that the speaker refrains from voting. "Every country has a flag, but we are one of the few countries that has a Bill of Rights," he said. "To make it a partisan issue is not, in my judgment, worthy of the president, and I'm sorry he's doing it." Neither side seems certain whether the 20-word amendment would receive the necessary two-thirds vote in both the House and Senate. It would then have to be approved by at least 38 of the 50 state legislatures. The amendment would provide an exception to the First Amendment by allowing Congress and state legislatures to outlaw physical desecration of the flag. The White House decided to schedule a public embrace of the amendment at what was going to be the private presentation of the Iwo Jima replica by its sculptor, Felix de Welten. On hand was Senator Mark Hatfield, one of the Marines who fought at the bloody battle in 1945. Bush denied the Republican Party intended to exploit the flag as a political issue. "Amending the Constitution to protect the flag is not a matter of partisan politics. It's not a Democrat nor Republican issue. I don't see it as either liberal or conservative. It's an American issue." But asked if he intended to talk about the issue during this fall's election campaigns, he replied, "You're darn right." It's a very easy thing when you get the flag behind you, when you say, "It's an American issue. Therefore, anyone who disagrees with me is an American." And that's precisely what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for the opposition to stop being so scared of this. You know, if Dukakis had stood up and said, "You know, I'm a liberal and I'm damn proud of it, and I'm just as much, if not more, American than George Bush here," who knows what would have happened in the election. And if our leaders today that oppose amending the Bill of Rights or knocking out one of the Bill of Rights, if they stand up and say, "This is an American issue, we want to preserve the Bill of Rights, and that's something that is as American as apple pie," then this issue will actually be fought on even ground. But until that happens, and I haven't seen it happen, I haven't seen enough people standing up and saying, you know, "This is un-American," which I don't like saying. I don't like saying something is un-American just because I don't agree with it, but it seems like this is something that goes against the very fiber of what the country was founded for. Free speech. Freedom of religion. Freedom to write what you want, to say what you want. And one by one, those freedoms are being taken away.
I mean, we could see a lot of changes in the 1990s. We could see a lot of positive changes, but the way we're going, we're moving in the wrong direction, folks. Now, let's look at something else. I've got a piece of obscenity in my hands. Yep, this is a piece of obscenity right here. Sounds just like any other record album, doesn't it? Drops on the console like any other record album, but it's not. It's not any other record album. This is the Two Live Crew record. Yeah, you know, I would never have gone out and bought this record, except for all the publicity it's been getting. I mean, can you believe it? People have been arrested for selling this record? People have been arrested for selling a record. People have been arrested for performing a song from the record. You know, sometimes I have to hit myself really hard to make sure I'm awake. But, it's true. It's true. Amending the Bill of Rights, banning record sales. But, as far as I know, they can't stop me from playing it. Two Live Crew, listen for yourself. This is called Coolin'.
Jockin' our cars. Someone called my name, so I yoked it quick and kicked it to the girlies who was all on the tip. As nightfall came, I was still out there having fun on the one, carefree without a care. You say it, we can play it. I'm here for the choosing. Marquise is chilling hard, coolin'. Must like to cool in the French cup bikini by the pool.
having good times. That's what we'll be doing, like rolling ears, stone cold cooling.
Everybody okay? You survived that? Oh, great. Nobody had heart attacks. Children didn't do things that children aren't supposed to do. Now everybody's okay. Okay, everybody's okay. That's good to know. All right, folks. Admittedly, that was a clean cut. That was a cut that had no four-letter words that I knew of. Unless they invented some new ones. Song was called Coolin', and it's off the Two Live Crew record, As Nasty As They Wanna Be. It's a double record. In fact, it's the last song on the last side. And there's other songs here that have titles that I can't even say. But, you know, we've lived with those rules for a while now. You know, the FCC does not allow certain types of language to go over the air. And that's, you know, that's something that we've been aware of for quite some time. It seems to be tightening up a bit. They seem to be expanding that to include thoughts and ideas. Well, that's something else. But now, it's expanded even further so that you can get arrested if you sell this record. You can get arrested if you perform songs from this record. I wonder if I can get arrested for having this record. Just put it over here on the side of the room there so nobody sees it when they walk in. Well, actually, no, I don't want to do that because I wanted to read something from this. The people they give thanks to, which I guess they're all on the blacklist now. That's pretty funny. Thanks to Tony Rock, Shy D, and Quet, MC Twist and the Def Squad, MC Hammer and the Posse, Tone Lock, M Walk, NWA, Public Enemy, Easy E, Stet, Tough Crew, Jazzy Jeff, and Fresh Prince, Cool Mo D, the Rhythm Radicals, Biz Markie, you name it, all there. To all the virgins, thanks for nothing. you gotta admit, these guys are a bit sexist, but is that any reason to prohibit their record from being distributed? I don't know. You know, you have to ask yourself, what is the real problem? Is the real problem the fact that this record exists? Or the real problem the fact that there seem to be so many people out there that want to always tell us what to do, what to think, what to buy, what to listen to, how to act, who to associate with? Where does it stop? Where does it all end? Well, to update you on the facts, in case you've been in a coma for the last few days, this is the deal. Two members of the best-selling rap group Two Live Crew were arrested early Sunday after they performed songs that a federal judge has ruled obscene. The arrests of band members came after the arrest of a record store owner in Fort Lauderdale 2 days ago. Actually, it's more like a week ago now, for refusing to stop selling the rap group's album As Nasty As They Wanna Be. A spokesman for the Broward County Sheriff's Office, that's in Florida, said the group's lead singer, Luther Campbell, and another singer, Chris Wangwan, were released shortly after the arrests without having to post bond. The arrests and legal skirmish over the sexually explicit rap record appear to have set the stage for a major legal test of laws defining obscenity. Bruce Rogow, the leading defense lawyer for the two live crew, says he intended to appeal the case all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary. The judge's finding is based on a Florida law that includes language from a Supreme Court ruling. The ruling defines obscenity as work that has no serious artistic, scientific, or political value. What we just heard has no artistic, scientific, or political value, in case you're too dumb to realize that on your own. The government will be more than happy to help you with that decision. Also, the definition of obscenity, patently offensive, something that would be found prurient by an average member of the community. I wish they'd stop using that word, you know? You can always tell you're dealing with government issues here when they use the word prurient. Anyway, Sunday's arrest took place at 3:05 a.m. after the four-member rap group had finished a performance at Club Futura in the neighboring city of Hollywood. Hollywood is in Broward County, where the federal district judge Jose Gonzalez last Wednesday found that the lyrics of As Nasty As They Want to Be were obscene. That legal finding appears to mean the songs cannot be provided to the public, whether minors or adults. Last night's show was for adults only. I'm sorry, I should say last Saturday's show. I'm reading Sunday's paper here. The Broward County Sheriff, Nick Navarro, said in a telephone interview that he had sent detectives to the group's concert on Saturday. Plainclothes police officers videotaped the performance. Would have been fun if they had, you know, gotten the stuffing beaten out of them for videotaping something they weren't supposed to videotape. You know, you ever try recording something at a concert and they don't let you do that? Oh, well. Mr. Navarro said a detective telephoned early in the morning to tell him the rap group had performed a song with a sexually explicit title from the album. So I ordered them to arrest all the band members who performed the song, Mr. Navarro said. There is no doubt that they violated a state statute. The lyrics have been declared obscene by a judge, whether you perform them on an album or at a concert. The police waited until the band had left the club before making the arrest so as to avoid a public incident. The police lost track of two of the band's members and, as of Sunday, had failed to arrest them. But they intended to file warrants for their arrest on Monday. And on Thursday, last Thursday it is, the record store owner, Charles Freeman, was arrested for refusing to stop selling the rap album, which was released in 1989. He has said that he intends to sell it again, even if it means going to jail. Sheriff Navarro reiterated that he intended to arrest Mr. Freeman again if he carries out the pledge to sell the album. All three men were arrested on the misdemeanor charge of violating state obscenity laws. The charge carries a maximum one-year jail sentence and a $1,000 fine. Saturday night's performance at Club Futura was attended by 300 to 400 people. On Friday night, the band played to a similar audience at Club New in Miami Beach. The show in Miami Beach included songs that depicted sex in extremely graphic language. Mr. Campbell started the show by leading the audience in a chant condemning Governor Bob Martinez and Sheriff Navarro. Three women from the audience were later allowed to get on the stage, and during the next song, band members simulated a variety of sexual positions with them. When one woman began taking off her clothes, Mr. Campbell pushed her to the floor, poured water on her, and walked off the stage. With that, the audience cheered its approval and streamed out into the pre-dawn twilight. Admittedly, not exactly the kind of show a lot of people would go to see, I suppose, but it's precisely for that reason that we have the First Amendment, to protect those people with whom we don't agree. And that includes groups that we find reprehensible. And I'm not saying I find Two Live Crew reprehensible, but I do know that there are people out there that don't like them very much. But part of the agreement, when you agreed to live in this country, you said, you'd honor the rights of those people that you don't agree with. In fact, those people you don't even respect. That's why the ACLU defends the American Nazi Party, because they recognize that very basic ingredient here. And I'm sure the people in power also recognize that. But they recognize something else. They recognize the amazing power that can be had if you're able to change the laws to your advantage. Imagine being able to decide what people can listen to. And I should say, on the front of this record, it says, and it's not a sticker, it's part of the album cover. It says, double album, warning, explicit language contained. There's your warning label, PMRC. That's what you wanted, right? There it is. Now what? You want to pull the record all together? I don't know, folks. I don't know. Are you going to let that happen? Are you going to let people tell you what you can and cannot listen to? No longer advise you, but pull it from the stores completely. Well, coming from today's paper, since a federal judge in Florida ruled the album to be obscene, the album has done more than lead to the arrest of three members of the group. Public officials in other municipalities are now listening to the record's lyrics and, at least in some instances, are getting riled enough to take action. Yesterday, in both Gwinnett County, Georgia, and San Antonio, Texas, police told record store owners to remove the album from their shelves if they want to avoid arrest under state obscenity laws. In Gwinnett, that's in suburban Atlanta, police also announced that the rap band, which is scheduled to appear at a teenage club there tonight, last night, Thursday night, actually, I guess at this moment, will be prosecuted if songs like the ones on As Nasty As They Want to Be are performed. Police Chief Wayne Bolden said he will personally be at the Ozone Club to monitor the situation, but said he doubted there would be problems. Meanwhile, in Huntsville, Alabama, the city council Monday night expanded the local obscenity ordinance to include live performances, a move officials concede was in anticipation of two live crews' scheduled appearance at the Civic Center there on Saturday. This flurry of activity since the Miami federal ruling, which only applies to South Florida, has deeply annoyed and frustrated members of the Miami-based band, a spokeswoman Deborah Bennett said yesterday. She noted that before teenage audiences, the band always performs the sanitized version of their records, and said all the threats and warnings from Gwinnett County officials amounted to a waste of time. If they'd only go after crime with as much gusto as they're going after this music, this would truly be a great country, she said. But Bennett conceded that the publicity, dubious as it may be, has had advantages. Our sales are definitely picking up. People now want the album as a novelty item. In Gwinnett County and San Antonio, officials are doing their best to make sure getting that item won't be easy. Police in Gwinnett said they had identified two record stores where the album was available, and yesterday, after notifying the managers they could be charged, announced the albums had been removed. There was complete cooperation, said Bolden. That same process began in 84 stores in San Antonio, and in about 5 days, police there will begin conducting undercover investigations and arresting anyone still selling the album. There's no prior restraint, said the commander of the vice squad in San Antonio. We're just asking for voluntary compliance. And, of course, let's look at the penalties here. The penalty for conviction for selling obscene material in Georgia can be a year in jail and a $5,000. The band said that the group thinks racism is a factor in their having been targeted for the first ever declaration of a record as being obscene. They're starting to consider the racial dimension, said Alan Jacoby, an attorney for Two Live Crew. Basically, they just say, how come it's only us? Andrew Dice Clay, a controversial white comic, is far more explicit than they are. Robin Blumner, executive director of the Miami office of the ACLU, said the racial dimension is evident. Certainly there are racial overtones in this witch hunt. This is a black group being attacked for culturally relevant music. Governor Bob Martinez, facing re-election this year, initiated the probe of the album in February, calling for an end to the sale of sexually explicit recordings to minors. The album has been declared obscene in the three counties that make up South Florida and in at least eight other counties across the state. And at a hearing a couple of days ago on the album in federal court, New York Newsday music critic John Leland appeared as an expert witness, testifying that the group's music has significant artistic value and is part of a definite musical tradition. Well, what are they going to say? Are they going to say that's nonsense? That there's no merit to this group whatsoever? We'd like to hear from the listeners, but first, before we go to the phones, I'd like to give a couple more examples of where we could go with this. You know, you call something obscene. Why do you call it obscene? You call it obscene because of the language? Okay, so nasty language, all right? Sexual situations. We're going to ban those too? Well, you know, I was listening to commercial radio on the way in. I do that sometimes. And I heard lots and lots and lots of songs. And I had to wonder, every time I listened to the song, you know, there's all kinds of things you could construe from this. I mean, you ever listen to Lola by the Kinks? You ever listen to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds? You know, there's all kinds of hidden meanings, things that those PMRC people would find objectionable, threatening. So if they succeed in taking something that most people consider extreme, admittedly Two Live Crew is extreme with their language, if they're successful there, what comes next? This is one of my favorite songs from Yoko Ono. I wonder, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, for someone that couldn't really handle a sexual situation, I suppose I could drive them right over the edge. But I've heard that song hundreds of times, Kiss, Kiss, Kiss by Yoko Ono off the Double Fantasy record with John Lennon back in 1980, 10 years ago, good Lord. And that's something I have to wonder about. Will they ban a song like that next? No words in there at all. No nasty words, but the idea of a sexual situation. And by the way, if you have that record, listen to it with headphones on. I never did that before. Sounds incredible with headphones on. Wow. But will that be next? Will any kind of song with that kind of subject matter and that way of presenting it? I mean, let's face the facts, folks. Sex is a pretty major part of people's lives. It's a pretty wonderful thing, you know? It's an amazing thing. Some might say it's even the highlight of our lives. Who knows? But it's a major part. Whether we ignore it or not, it's still a major issue. I mean, if you go through all your life ignoring sex, the energy that you need to give out to ignore sex is tremendous, believe me. And if you don't ignore sex, then all kinds of situations manifest themselves. Are we supposed to ignore all of that and not sing about that in our music? Not draw pictures about it? Not take pictures of it? Not write books? Not talk on the radio? Let's get real. Let's wake up to reality here. Why must we create this artificial world just because some people are too inhibited to deal with it? All right, sex is one big thing. Religion is another. I saw Negative Land at the Knitting Factory last week. And they do a song called Christianity is Stupid, and that's what their t-shirt says, too. And I bought one of their t-shirts, and folks, you've never known attention until you walk around your neighborhood wearing a t-shirt that says Christianity is Stupid. Oh, I met all kinds of people, but that's not the point. The point is, it's just an expression. Just three words. Christianity is stupid. A lot of people can't handle it. A lot of people can't handle criticism of any sort. And it's equivalent to the flag-burning issue. You know, if you burn a flag, that's a statement. It's a symbolic statement. If you say Christianity is stupid, that's another symbolic statement. But if you offend somebody, what do you do? Do you not make a statement? Do you just crawl into a shell and pretend that you didn't have these evil thoughts ever? Ask yourself this. This particular band that I have here on the other turntable, King Missile. What do you think the senator's wives would think of this song? Would this one be next? And after we play this, I guess we'll take some phone calls at 212-279-3400. Give a listen.
Jesus was way cool. Everybody liked Jesus. Everybody wanted to hang out with him. Anything he wanted to do, he did. He turned water into wine. And if he wanted to, he could have turned wheat into marijuana, or sugar into cocaine, or vitamin pills into amphetamines. He walked on the water and swam on the land. He would tell these stories, and people would listen. He was really cool. If you were blind or lame, you just went to Jesus, and he would put his hands on you, and you would be healed. That's so cool. He could have played guitar better than Hendrix. He could have told the future. He could have baked the most delicious cake in the world. He could have scored more goals than Wayne Gretzky. He could have danced better than Baryshnikov. Jesus could have been funnier than any comedian you can think of. Jesus was way cool. He told people to eat his body and drink his blood. That's so cool. Jesus was so cool. But then some people got jealous of how cool he was, so they killed him. But then he rose from the dead. He rose from the dead, danced around, and went up to heaven. I mean, that's so cool. Jesus was way cool. No wonder there are so many Christians.
blasphemy!
That's what that is, blasphemy. You want your kid growing up with that kind of ridiculous notion of what Christianity is all about? Pull that record from the stores. Not that you'll find it in very many stores. I had to hunt around quite a bit for it. King Missile on Shimmy Disc Records. And Jesus Was Way Cool. What do you think, folks? What do you think? You think anything that makes fun of religion will be next? First we have Nasty Language. Then we have Sexual Situations. Then we have Mocking Religion. Soon we'll have Mocking the Government. You know? You'll have a Romania kind of situation where you have a demonstration one day, the government calls in the goons, then the next day all the demonstrators get beaten up. It's the same thing. The same thing can happen to me. If I go down to Washington, D.C., I don't even have to go down to Washington, D.C. I can just go out in the street and burn a flag, something that I probably could have done 2 years ago without anybody really caring one way or the other. Hey, lunatics burning a flag, big deal. But now, all of these people have been given the signal that it's okay to beat up anybody that's burning a flag. Have you heard of those legislators that have said, well, if you're going to allow flag burning, then I insist that we only impose a $25 fine on anybody that beats up somebody that's burning a flag. Well, what's that saying? That's saying go out there and beat up those people that are expressing themselves in what you may consider an offensive way, but expressing themselves nonetheless. And how is that different than what happened in Romania yesterday? Not very different, folks. Not very different at all. Well, it's about 20 minutes to 1 o'clock in the morning. Our phone number is 212-279-3400. We have one, count them, one open line. The rest are all taken, so if you call up and get a busy signal, hit redial and try again. Good morning.
Hello, Emmanuel.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've heard your show a few times, and I like it. I think you deal with some interesting issues. I do think I've picked up on a pattern that I feel sometimes limits the persuasiveness of your arguments, which is I think you tend to set up a straw man for the purpose of knocking it down a lot. I think you take the argument of the people who are against the two live crew argument, and you take it way beyond proportion to make it look as absurd as possible, which is okay, but it seems to be your standard debating technique, and I think it sort of wears thin from issue to issue.
Well, now, don't you think it's a ridiculous thing to ban a record, to arrest somebody for selling something like that?
It's a more complicated issue than you make it out to be. I don't have much taste for censorship myself, and I'm not very interested in arresting two live crew or people who sell the record, but at the same time, I think that there's another way of looking at this issue, which is the question of if you understand that whereas freedom of speech in the abstract is infinite, freedom of speech in the real world is always something a little bit fragile, then the question becomes, where do you take your stance, and what are the best test cases for taking your stance? And the thing that I lament is that in recent times, it seems that it's been kind of a situation of hold your nose and support so-and-so. You know, it's kind of like hold your nose and support Robert Mapplethorpe, or hold your nose and support Two Live Crew. I think that it's notable that there have been very few leaders of the black community who have come forward in support of Two Live Crew. And I think the reason for that is because a lot of black community leaders feel that to make a test case out of culture, which in some ways is almost a dream come true for right-wing loony bins who want to stereotype black people in a negative way, for them, Two Live Crew couldn't be better because it's the perfect issue for racist whites to hold up and say, see, this is what black culture is, and this is why we think separate but equal is the only way you can deal with these people. I mean, that's one of the things that disturbs me about Two Live Crew, and again, I'm not interested in censoring it, but it seems to me that there is a certain kind of cultural separatism that is self-defeating for the black community. And I think there are a lot of middle-class blacks of the duly employed church-going variety who are as outraged over Two Live Crew as many whites might be.
Of course, and one of the biggest mistakes that everybody seems to make is treating black people as one monolithic group of people. It's not true at all. There's conservatives, liberals, all kinds of things. You'd be amazed. But, you know, I don't think it's
I don't think it's a black issue so much as an artistic issue. I mean, yeah, they're going to go for the most extreme. They're not going to go for someone that's selling millions of records. They're going to go for someone that can't fight back, at, you know, very strongly anyway. So what are they going to go for? Something on the fringe. And of course, people are scared to step up and say, I support this group, because it's the same thing with supporting flag burners. You'll be accused of being in with them when all you're trying to do is just protect the free speech issue for everybody.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I see a difference. For example, I'm very much inclined to stick up for flag burners. I'm less inclined to devote my energies to sticking up for Two Live Crew. And the difference is that burning a flag covers an extremely broad variety of situations. For example, for me, I have a particular way of relating to that idea, which is that personally I don't think it's very hip to burn flags these days. I think it just tends to be self-defeating. But in the long history of any nation state, there are bound to be periods of time when the government tries to force people to do really morally unconscionable things. For example, if you were a German in Nazi Germany, I would think that burning a swastika would be one of the most profound symbolic acts one could be performing. Now, I don't think we've reached that point in America. I don't look at America as Nazi Germany. But if we are fortunate to have a history that consists of many hundreds or perhaps thousands of years, it would be naive to imagine that we will never be in a situation where the government is trying to compel people to do things that are so ugly and so inhuman that under those circumstances it would not be, in fact, totally appropriate to burn a flag. And at such time, those who have the courage to burn flags should not be hampered by law. On the other hand, I'm looking at the Village Voice printout of some of the Live Crew lyrics, and I'm checking out what some people might call the consciousness of that music, and I'm having a hard time finding a whole lot of art in it.
Well, because you can't find art in it, does that mean that somebody else can't find art in it? And should you be able to say, this has no artistic value, therefore nobody is allowed to listen to it? I mean, look, walk down the street. You hear all kinds of language that you can't hear on TV. Now, are you going to tell me that you can't reproduce that in any form whatsoever because somebody doesn't like it?
Well, I'm not going to say that. I am going to say that the very thorny problem that the Supreme Court has tried to wrestle with for years is the question, in part, of figure-ground relationships. This, for example, I'm looking at a poem, and I'd like to read it to you, but I can't because it would get BAI in trouble with the FCC.
Uh-huh, and would pervert all kinds of people out there, and who knows what would happen, wake up to in the morning.
My point is that this poem, perhaps in as one-third of a page in a novel about life in the ghetto or about what have you, might be, in terms of figure-ground relationships, it might play its role in artistic work. I personally have, and again, I'm not eager to censor Two Live Crew, but I'm saying that I think there are reasons why there is a Supreme Court that's out there to try and figure out what...
Yeah, but...
I think every society tries to find ground rules that are reasonable.
How much do you think the Supreme Court knows about the culture of a group like Two Live Crew? Do they know anything at all about what it's like to grow up black in America, to grow up in poverty-stricken areas? They don't know. They don't know that kind of thing, and it's foolish to think that they do. And it's obvious by what they say in their rulings that they have no conception whatsoever of this.
But I think you're taking things a little far in that. I mean, given the fact that the Supreme Court has twice repelled laws against flag burning, including people that were considered to be conservative Reagan appointees who everybody thought would never support anyone.
Well, the vote was 5-4. It makes me a little shaky.
Well, I mean, according to the people who are predicting that the Reagan... I agree with you. 5-4 is... It makes me feel shaky, too. But when you assume that nobody on the Supreme Court, or that most people on the Supreme Court, have no inkling of anything other than their own middle-class lives, I think that assumes that is a lot that is not easily backed up by evidence. I mean, the Supreme Court, it was the Supreme Court that has been responsible for much of the progress, admittedly slow progress, but much of the progress that has been possible for minorities in this country. The Supreme Court overturned many, many years ago laws that prevented Chinese and Japanese people from owning land. It overturned the idea of segregation. I'm not trying to suggest that the Supreme Court is necessarily a champion of liberal causes. I am saying that if you want to pick on the bad guys in the society, I think Jesse Helms is a much more comfortable target for satire than the Supreme Court.
sure.
Quite
yeah.
often it does surprisingly well.
Well, I think it could do better, but yes, definitely our elected officials are the big troublemakers as far as this kind of thing goes. Jesse Helms is a perfect example, but let's not stop there. You know, how much do you think George Bush knows about this kind of other culture in America? America is filled with different cultures. That's the beauty of it. And to make it into one, you know, neutral kind of a thing where certain values are upheld everywhere, the values just aren't the same. You know, you can go from different boroughs here in Manhattan and find things completely differently run. That's the way it should be. That's the way it was meant to be, I think.
I agree with you. The only place where I disagree with you is I think that there are two extremes that need to be avoided in a society, in a nation state as diverse as ours. One is the totalitarian idea of trying to create one uniform culture that everybody has to subscribe to. And the other is to permit a situation to occur where the culture becomes so fragmented that there is nothing resembling an American identity. I think it's a thorny problem, and I think that whereas I'm very much on the side of freedom of speech, I think that there's a tendency for people on the left to give too little credence to those who are concerned that we are reaching the point where we just have, it seems at times, to have no standards of decency left. Just one last quick point.
Well, let me just ask you one thing. Do you think it's ever necessary to arrest somebody as they're leaving the stage of a performance of people that have voluntarily gone to that performance and that is judged by many to be an artistic work? Do you think it's ever something that should be accepted in this country to arrest somebody for doing that?
That's a tough question. I don't have an absolute answer. I intended to stick by my guns and say that in theory I could envision such circumstances. The trouble is that when you're on the fringe, it becomes very confusing. I mean, I'm looking at some of these lyrics, and whereas I personally don't have much, I don't think I would be interested in arresting anybody from Two Live Crew, but I can understand that it happens, and I can't completely dismiss those people who look at some of these lyrics and say, wait a second, there's something dreadfully wrong here.
Well, again, the album is not being forced on people, the performances aren't being forced on people, the FCC has already got all the radio stations living in fear as far as playing things that have nasty language in them, so I don't see what the new problem is, you know?
But I think that it is legitimate in a society for people to ask questions and to consider placing limits upon what they feel decency and obscenity are about. I mean, take the example of child pornography, and let's take the best case example, and it sounds dreadful to even use the phrase best case example. Let's take the case of a child who has been treated well, but has nonetheless been asked to disrobe and who has had photographs made and disseminated for commercial purposes. I think we intuitively agree that there's still something wrong about that, even if the child has no complaint and even if the customers are satisfied, we still intrinsically feel that there's something dreadfully wrong, even if it's completely voluntary and there's no coercion.
Yeah, but there's a definite victim there. Where is the victim here?
Well, where is the victim? I mean, let me play a devil's advocate with you for a moment. What is it that intuitively makes us feel that there's something ugly when a child is photographed in that way?
Well, assuming that child molestation is a crime, which it is.
Well, you're saying molestation. I'm saying suppose it's voluntary. Suppose the child feels that no wrong has been done.
Well, again, you know, if there is a law saying that doing this with a child is illegal, then there a law has been broken and the child is the victim, whether he wants to be or not. But in this case, I don't see a victim, you know?
There's a law saying that you can't use certain words in a certain context. I mean, you're just saying that the law makes it all right, and I'm saying...
Wait, no. There's no law that says you can't use certain words in a certain context. You can't do that on the radio, but there's no law that says you can't do that in real life.
Sure.
Not yet, anyway.
In terms of disseminating information in the form of written or spoken or recordings and so forth. I don't disagree with you all that much in spirit, but I just think that you set up a straw man and you give, and many people give too little credence to the idea that there is so much ugliness in our society, and people are looking, sometimes in a misguided way, but they're looking to try and find some way of slow down the process of corruption. The last very brief point I wanted to make about the Supreme Court ruling is that one of the Supreme Court members, I don't recall which justice, in fact, pointed out that he felt that many of the politicians were violating the flags violating the flag by turning this into a partisan issue.
Right, the minority view said that, and I was impressed by that, yes.
Okay, thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thanks for calling, and the number is 279-3400. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's burn a flag.
Well, go right ahead if that's what you want to do, but...
Oh, I just wanted to do it because, from what you said...
I inspired you, huh?
You inspired me. I think that the present listener is a... The guy who just listened is a fool.
Uh-huh.
My name is Joe Rubin.
Well, that's your problem. Good morning. Well, someone's got the TV set on. Good morning.
Yeah, I think that, unfortunately, the previous caller, the one who...
Which one?
...to you at length...
Okay.
...showed a certain selectivity... that he raises the issue that, well, he's for free speech. On the other hand, the Two Live Crew has said things that are offensive. I think that basically your point of view is that we cannot make these selections. We have to be for free speech without any question. And then getting into the substance of the issue, the fact that Two Live Crew reflects a certain culture and they express certain things realistically about sex, what's the big deal? Who's offended? Who's shocked? Except people who want to restrict other people's liberties, who are prudish, and therefore the case has to be defended without any question.
Well, the people that are offended, ironically enough, are the people that would never buy the record and never see one of the shows. But the people that see the shows, the people that buy the record, if they're offended, they should get their money back. But I don't think very many of them are asking for their money back at this point.
And this is a whole problem. You have a group that seeks to impose its values on other people in the community, and they strike a blow against the essential freedom that we should all enjoy under the First Amendment.
And of course, they're going to pick the thing that you might say, "Hey, yeah, I guess they're right. This really is a horrible thing." But folks, the part of living in democracy, you make up your mind about what is good and what is bad. That's an opinion issue.
That's exactly the case, and therefore I have to say you are not setting up a straw man. You're not overemphasizing things. You're presenting it in a clear, intelligent way, consistent with what our Constitution stands for and what the Bill of Rights is all about, and please continue to do so.
Okay, thanks for calling, and let's hope some of our elected officials present it in a clear, concise way and aren't afraid to stand up to this, because that's what it boils down to, folks, since McCarthyism, you know? What was McCarthyism? It was fear of communism. Communism was this big, horrible thing. Well, now obscenity is this big, horrible thing. And all these anti-American people that we have running around burning flags. I don't know, folks. I don't know. What's the next step? That's what I'm really curious about. Good morning.
I think that the real straw dog is the words like communism and obscenity and everything else. In the 50s, they had in this society, when people said that this was a great country, there was segregation in most places in this country. There was people were in a state of slavery.
Damn right, and it wouldn't have been changed had people simply kowtowed to this kind of nonsense.
Well, that's exactly what happened in the 60s when things got loose. Civil rights legislation came about. People were able to express themselves in a more civil way. The other things happened.
And it was costly,
too. Part of freedom.
It certainly is. It's something that we're entrusted with. We have to we have to speak up when something doesn't quite sound right to us. And it's easy to say, well, George Bush, he's a president. He should know. I trust him. But, folks, you're a citizen of this country. You're entrusted with it as well. And if you see something that's wrong, say something about it. That's what it's all about. Good morning.
Yep, good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm on the air.
You certainly are.
I'll turn the radio down.
Okay.
I don't quite get the point, if it's one that you're making or some of the listeners are making, that this rap group, do they represent, are you saying they represent black culture by their use?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm saying they represent a culture. I don't know what culture they represent or who they represent. But the fact of the matter is, they are artists. Whether you like it or not, they are putting out their particular rendition of something. And if you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. You don't have to go to their performances. I don't see what the harm is.
Well, I think the caller, a couple of callers back, who said it's a more complicated issue, is correct. And I think he's trying, and I think many people are, despite the ones that always come across with the usual. And, I'm as much for the First Amendment as the next guy, but... I think it's more complicated than that. I think we live in a society extremely violent, with an extremely violent group of people, both black and white, particularly in the past, maybe it's always been that way, but it certainly has come to the fore in a polarization in the past couple of months or year.
Well, do you see this record as adding to that somehow?
Well, yes. Yeah, I think that society, that there are community interests. I think there are all kinds of interests. There is free speech, but free speech doesn't exist, I think what this fellow is saying, in a vacuum. It exists in a society, and a society does have concerns. I don't know if they may even have a certain rights. And there are certain things that we don't allow to happen, and how far one goes in trying to protect one's family and one's community, and what these artists, as you put it, and I have been a singer and an artist myself, what their motivation and what their standard is to get to become popular, you know, is questionable. Now, whether they should be arrested or not, I don't know. But maybe something should be said beyond just saying that they have a right to say it. I don't know if the answer is that anybody has a right to say anything. I don't know if Al Sharpton has a right to say anything. And the media, which is also culpable to an extent because it isn't just the people that are going to the concert. I read about it in the paper. I would rather not have read about it. Yeah, I didn't have to buy the paper. I understand.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't one can walk around with your ears plugged in a Walkman and your eyes closed. Nevertheless, if I shout out something on the street, somebody else hears it. It's a little ivory tower or something, or unreal to say speech and things don't affect people. You know, I'm not a believer that someone goes to the movie and then goes out and kills, but nevertheless, I didn't have to go to the concert. I saw it there in the paper.
Okay, sir, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Yeah.
But this is a situation we're going to have to continue discussing in the weeks and months ahead. Thanks very much for calling. And folks, sorry to all those of you we didn't get to, but this is an important issue, something that I think we should continue beyond this radio program. And if you feel strongly about it, write to your legislators, write to your government, say something. Write letters to the paper. Write letters to us here at BAI. We like to get letters. Just express yourself. Keep your mind open, and we'll be talking about this again in a few weeks. And if you could expand upon what Robert Gordon's going to say a little bit, freedom is what it all matters. That's what it's all about. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
In my heart, only sorrow. And I'm sad as a man can be. I sit alone in the darkness of my lonely room, and this room is a prison to me. I look out my window, and what do I see? I see a bird way up in a tree. I wanna be free.
Oh yes,
free. What good are my eyes? They can't see you. And my arms, they can't hold you so tight. I have two lips that are yearning, but they're no good to me. 'Cause I know I can't kiss you tonight. I look out my window, and what do I see? I see a bird way up in a tree. I wanna be free.
Oh yes,
free.
Oh yes,
free. I wanna be free, like a bird in a tree.
This is the WBAI in New York City.
Weather outlook for Friday? Hazy, hot, and humid.
Time is running out to get your tickets to the WBAI Moonlight River Cruise. They can be purchased with MasterCard or Visa by calling 212-279-0707. Or, if you prefer, you can drop by the station between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. We're at 505 8th Avenue, corner of 35th Street. If you can't call or stop by, you can get tickets at the dock on Pier 84, that's 44th Street and 12th Avenue, on Friday, June 15th, after 4:30 p.m. The WBAI River Cruise, celebrating 30 years of listener-sponsored radio in New York. Don't miss it. For more information, call 212-279-0707. See ya!
Everybody and have a party!
Hey, the WBAI Moonlight River Cruise around Manhattan aboard the floating hospital. You know, this microphone gets changed every time I come in here. Hi, this is Radio Unnameable at this hour. And my name is Bob Fass, and I have a couple of tapes, and maybe there'll be some telephone calls. We might get a report from... promised to be a riotous night in the East Village, where people who think that some important point is made by the burning of Old Glory, or Old Gory, as we used to call it, will be barbecuing the flag, and other people will be trying to have a meeting to get everybody to agree to take the homeless and cover them with a cloak of invisibility, at least to get them out of the park, Tompkins Square Park, so that the police will be able to sit on the back of the bench, as I've seen them doing lots and lots of times. I have an interview this morning with... a really wonderful gentleman whose name is Carmen Trotter. And Carmen is a resident and a worker at the Catholic Worker. And he'll tell you a little bit about what the Catholic Worker is. But I also have a tape that